Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Reverend, I was talking to someone who said to me recently, he walked by a store and there was a sign in the window that says, "We treat you like family." He says, "Uh-oh, I'm not going in there." We have someone today who we treat as family. He treats us as family, and it's a wonderful relationship. I'm talking about the great controller of the state of New York, the Honorable Thomas P. DiNapoli. Controller, welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Rev. It's great to be back on the show with you.
And by the way, Rev, not only is he a guest, he's a loyal listener.
Yes, and indeed.
Very often he'll call me with his criticism of what you say.
I always say Dr. Bernard is right on.
He doesn't have to call me. That's the point.
I give Rabbi Joe constructive criticism. Yeah, that's how it works.
Thank you.
But no, it's, you know, one of the guests on the program today, Mr. Controller, Richard Taylor, who just appointed deputy chief NYPD, Orthodox Jew, first time the highest ranking Orthodox Jew in the department. You're a controller. You're a proud Catholic. Mm-hmm. You're a person who's been probably to more synagogues than you have churches over the years, but you're proud of your faith. And I think it's very important that people see that you don't have to camouflage your identity to be a successful leader. Because, you know, too often in history, people were not able to wear the Star of David, the yarmulke, the cross, or whatever. They'd have to hide it because they fear they wouldn't get the position. That's change. Not completely, but at least, you know, a great, great improvement from where we were.
Well, you know, for me, it's also a source of strength. You know, so I find that, especially given the pace of the work that an elected official often has to deal with, to have that time, you know, an hour a week to be at Mass, in my case, is really a time of reflection, kind of closing out the noise of day-to-day effort. So, you know, for me, it's something that has meaning, and I think I'm sure I said to you, Rabbi, and maybe have said on the show as well, it's a time for me to reflect on the people in my life who are no longer with us. Time for prayer, for, you know, for my late parents, as an example. And all that's very important to me because it gives me strength. I think it's important for people in public life not to try to use, right, their religion as, you know, a political advantage, right? Sometimes I think that gets abused. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular, but you know when you see it. But I think there's no reason not to be proud of your heritage and to celebrate it. And also, for me, having gone to other faith traditions, and I've had the privilege to be a Christian cultural center and hear Dr. Bernard and certainly Rabbi many synagogues and services that you presided at. Having my grounding in Catholicism has helped me better understand the other traditions as well and really appreciate the commonality between the different traditions, you know, certainly between Judaism and Christianity, but as well Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, all the other wonderful religions that we have here in the greater New York area. And to me, it's a wonderful gift. And given the challenging times we're going through, I wish more people would lean into their faith. I think we'd all be better off for it.
And let me say something. I was at a meeting Saturday morning, the weekend of the Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus in Albany. And I'm working with the new director of the governor's new Office of Faith and Not-for-Profit Services. And we had a meeting that morning. And as I'm exiting the meeting, I see this Tom DiNapoli-sponsored clergy breakfast that was historically done by you. Is that true that you have sponsored a gathering of clergy as part of that weekend?
We do it, you know, we do it in coordination with the caucus staff. Actually, this year we did a reception the night before, but we have sponsored the clergy breakfast. And, you know, as you know, having been there, there are many activities going on simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's loaded. Yeah,
weekend.
It's a loaded weekend.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this year, actually, we did the reception, but we have been a sponsor of the clergy breakfast as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was told. Wow. Yeah. I, you know, people don't know some of the things that go on behind the scenes. But you live, and I've had the pleasure of knowing you over the years, and we still got to do lunch. I haven't forgotten. but you live in an awareness of, I would say, and I can say this, the presence of God in many, many ways with what you do within society. Not everyone lives in that awareness and sensitivity and the sense that we're held to a higher accountability because there's a higher authority above us. But you live that out on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think, and I'm sure, Pastor, you and I have talked about it, you know, it was instilled in me early on. It really was a gift from my starting with my immigrant grandparents, and certainly my parents, particularly my mother growing up, you know, probably in the 50s and 60s, tradition was that, you know, the women were the ones that, you know, transmitted religious training and sensibility. And it's interesting, my dad, who lived to 92, lived many years, my mother passed at a relatively young age, my dad, in his later years, rediscovered the importance of religion and faith. He had been an altar boy and all of that as a young man, wasn't as observant as my mother had been in some of the years we were growing up. But in his later years, very much felt the presence of God. And so I think for me, that's just something that's been instilled in me and role models, you know, in my family home. And I mean, look, for a lot of immigrants of my grandparents' generation, they came here with nothing. And they only got through it because they had faith in God, that there was a bigger and better plan out there, no matter what adversity they were going through. And, I think my parents held on to that as well. And I consider it a very special gift to have. And it means a lot to me. Given how crazy the world is right now, I feel bad for people that don't believe in something bigger and better than we are.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Controller. Yeah. Yeah. You've always been a loyal, loving supporter of the State of Israel, and you've been there many times. You just returned from another trip, and I think this trip was somewhat transformative for you. You saw things that you hadn't seen before. Talk about it.
Well, this certainly was a very different trip, given everything going on there. Actually, it was my sixth visit to Israel, and it was the shortest in terms of duration, but it was part of a solidarity mission sponsored by Jewish Community Relations Council of New York. And it wasn't the usual, see the different sites. It was really one to get a sense as to what the country is going through since the October 7th attack. And, you know, I would observe this when people ask me what was the mood there. Israel is a country in mourning. It's a country in shock. I have to say, everybody we spoke to, whatever, you know, political persuasion they may have come from or whatever their background or profession, it's still with a sense of disbelief as to what happened on October 7th. The brutality of the attack by Hamas, the fact that the Israel intelligence and military obviously failed to protect the citizenry, and the fact that there are still so many hostages still being held. I mean, this is a trauma that continues. And as we all know from, you know, following what's going on there, there's obviously trauma on the other side of the border, you know, in Gaza. And it is a region, I think, uncertain as to where it's all headed, but certainly the sense from the Israelis is that they must do whatever they can to get the hostages back, number one, but number two, make sure that this kind of an attack would not happen again. There could be debate about how that's achieved. Obviously, there's debate about that. But I guess I would also say the resilience of the Israelis is still there. The commitment to be sure that that it is a nation state that will survive, and it is the only Jewish state on the globe, and it's important that that security be there and be preserved.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice. Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
Yeah, I would love to hear you expand on what you just said. I think it's so important. You said Israel is a state in mourning, and they're not just mourning their own loss of life, the loss of Jewish life, but they're mourning the reality of having to be at war, to be engaged in this kind of violence. Would you say that?
Absolutely. Look,
and you know why? Because there are those who think that the state of Israel is taking pleasure in engaging in violence acts. You know what I mean? And that's why what you said is so important.
Not at all. No, not at all. I mean, it's such an important point. Look, they've been in a tough neighborhood since their founding, and they've had struggles and wars, you know, over the years. But I think they had reached a point, if I could generalize, with a basic sense of security. That security was shattered by what happened on October 7th. You know, the fact that thousands of terrorists were able to come in and so many innocent lives were lost. And I do believe there's empathy for the innocent lives being lost on the other side of the border. But but hostages have to be returned and security has to be guaranteed. And you look at some of the rhetoric coming from the other side, that there's no sense that they understand that. I mean, again, I'm generalizing, but I think that that's a fair concern. You know, you just think about it. We went down to the south and we visited one of the kibbutz that was overrun, Kfar Aza. And you look at the kibbutzim, and Rabbi, you know, back me up on this. I think I'm saying it correctly. The kibbutzim tend to be the most progressive and left in
Correct.
Israeli society, the ones most advocating for peace, the ones who would have Palestinians coming over the border to work, you know, in their farms and fields. They were the ones who bore much of the brunt of this attack. They are the ones who were in the most disbelief that they had been, you know, certainly not supportive generally. Again, I'm generalizing of the Netanyahu government, and they were the ones who suffered the greatest loss. And you know, we met with a young woman who survived the Nova Music Festival. I mean, they descended on this. You know, remember, too, it was a Jewish holiday, right? It was the end of Sukkot, beginning
right.
of Simchat Torah.
Correct.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these folks are coming through, gliding in, motorcycles, and puncturing what everybody over there thought was a secure security line, and just randomly picking off all these young people. And, you know, you go there, and because they celebrate each life, you know, we were at the kibbutz. You saw a house that was burned or destroyed, but they had a picture of the person who was either kidnapped or killed there. You went to the music festival site. They had a picture and a stand for every person that was killed or kidnapped there. And they're planting in another part of that site trees in the name of each person, you know, who was a victim, you know, with a sense of hope and renewal for the future. I guess I'd sum it up this way. We met with someone who was retired from IDF and was called up again. And when they heard about the attacks, he said that his wife said, "They're coming for us." And I think that was that sense of that shattered sense of security, that there was that this is an onslaught coming. And, you know, I guess I wish leaving there, you know, Pastor, I wish I had a sense as to what would be the way to conclude all this. I mean, I guess the easy answer is let the hostages out and let's get back to some negotiation, but it's probably not that simple. But anybody that thinks that the Israelis are divided, they're very much united. Hostages have to come back, and security has to be reinstated.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because, Control, I hear all the calls for a ceasefire. And if that means return of Hamas, a terrorist organization that openly declares its determination to destroy not just Israel, but Jews, then that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You can't have, you know, things the way they were. And the fact that on October the 5th, October the 6th, there was a ceasefire all the time before the 7th, a ceasefire, and look what happened there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You now, you know, having the Israelis saying, no, we can't go back to the way things were, because we do not want to lose lives again because of such an attack. So
And they've been there before. I mean, what I'd recommend, you know, to your listeners, if they haven't seen it, and I saw the movie before October 7th, and I saw it actually on the plane ride back to America. See the movie Golda.
Mm-hmm.
Helen Mirren.
Oh, right.
Fabulous performance. But it was so much like the Yom Kippur War.
Mm-hmm.
A surprise attack on a Jewish holiday, and a shattering of a sense of security. They've seen this picture before, and I think the Israelis were really taken aback that it happened again. Obviously, there's a need for a lot of rebuilding in Israel, and they're looking for more support with the bonds. We actually, New York has purchased another $95 million worth of State of Israel bonds. Right. So that commitment continues.
Yeah. So let me ask you, New York. Let's talk about New York.
Oh, can I say one last thing on Israel before you get to New York?
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
And you'll tell me if I'm violating, you know, privilege by saying this. We went to the Western Wall. That was one of the, you know, stops we did. And I put in the message to God, and the message only was three words: peace, peace, peace. And I hope by saying that, God will say, you're not supposed to say that out loud. But I think that's what we all must continue to work towards and pray for the Palestinians, for the Israelis, for the entire world community. So much conflict going on right now. In 2024, we shouldn't be in this state of affairs. Let's all pray for peace. Let's get back to that, you know, as Reverend said, that belief in God, and that there is a better plan out there.
And that you put that note in Hebrew impresses me even more, that you have that ability.
Well, it wasn't in Hebrew. It wasn't in Italian. But it was a very clear English.
Yeah. So let's talk about New York before we let you go.
Yep.
You've heard all the prognosticators saying that New York is on the decline, and it's not going to come back. And if it come back, it'd be very diminished, and people are leaving, companies are leaving. Talk to that.
Well, look, we have struggles. Some of those struggles have been there for a while. Many of those struggles were accentuated by the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the close down, all that. We are still recovering. We've gotten back about 95% of the jobs that were lost, so we still have a bit to go. We do have a loss of taxpayers and population. It is not as severe as the critics say, but mm-hmm. it is a pattern that continues. You know, it's gotten a little better. It was worse, you know, during the pandemic, but you know, there are challenges out there. I mean, you know, we all are in New York City on a regular basis. We still don't have everybody returning to the workplace, to the offices. That's having an impact on the economy, especially in the Central Business District. The workplace has been transformed, right? Many places are, you know, if not fully remote, at least partially remote. That's having an impact on the economy. The state budget that the governor presented, that's being negotiated now, I think is realistic in terms of the numbers. There'll always be debate about how you specifically spend the money. But we have to face the reality that while the economic picture and the revenues coming in are a bit better than we would have said 6-9 months ago, you know, the economy is still somewhat volatile, uncertain as to where we're headed. And all the federal money that really kept New York City afloat, New York State afloat, That's, you know, being spent down now. And we have these expenses that were never budgeted for. You know, 2 years ago, we weren't talking about billions of dollars to have to be spent on a migrant crisis and money to support the asylum seekers. You know, we need the federal government to step up on a policy level to do some different things, but also to help New York City and New York State get through all this. So there are some real fiscal challenges out there. But, I think, as I said, on balance, it's not as bad as the critics say. We all have to do a lot more to keep this recovery going. And, you know, to my friends in the legislature and the same for our friends in the city council here, be realistic as far as the budget. There are out-year budget gaps, both for the city and the state, that we must make sure won't get worse by decisions being made in the upcoming budget negotiations, both in Albany and at City Hall.
Controller, I like what you said. We'll get through this. As we end on a positive note with hope, you're in finance and you know that the numbers tell a story that it's cyclical.
Yes.
Economics, it's cyclical. Yep. You know, there are highs and lows. We go through these periods and, you know, things change, but it's not like this is where we stay, correct?
Absolutely right. And of late, the numbers have been bad. Hey, look, I'm always concerned about, you know, the markets because of the pension fund, you know, that I'm responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
The markets have been much better, you know, so there's as much good. In fact, I'd argue there's more good that we're seeing in the numbers than numbers of concern. But there's still work to be done.
Mm.
We have to make smart choices when we're talking about spending and budgeting.
So you're optimistic about the future. And keep in mind, you're on WABC. Talk radio.
I believe in God. I'm optimistic for the future, and I believe in the people of New York. This is still the best place to be. It's with the most creative and resilient people. We will figure out how to get through it and get to a better place.
Right. Controller.
And amen to that. That's good preaching, Rabbi.
Yeah, it is. And Controller, thank you. Your willingness to send me the Reverend's unclaimed funds.
Here we go.
Because I know now I can look forward to a very prosperous retirement.
Thank you both. It's always great to be on your show.
Just thank you for always being there, not only for Israel during this, for the people of the state, for people who are hurting. You are, you know, I'm a Catholic with a small C. You're a Catholic with a capital C and a small C. We appreciate you for who you are and all that you do. We're grateful.
God bless. Wait. God bless all of you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. God bless.